There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Hey, welcome to Midday Mobile at FM Talk 106.5. Jeff Poor, once again, filling in for the legendary Sean Sullivan, taking a little time off today. Always a pleasure to talk to a Mobile audience. You can hear me weekdays up in Huntsville. I am a host on WVN and the Jeff Poor Show in the afternoons. If you're ever up that way, you also read my work on Yellowhammer News. And I am in your market at Lanyap. In the lanyapmobile.com, or if you pick up a Lanyap, you can read my weekly column, The Beltway Beat. So hopefully you can do that. But enough of the introductions there. Let's talk about some news. Let's get right into it. Donald Trump resuming his coronavirus task force meetings. This apparently is a big deal to the media. They're getting a lot of oxygen for it today. We just heard at top of the hour news. I'm talking about it. There is really a full court press by our national media to get coronavirus back, make it the end-all be-all story. Something else, though, just deviate from the coronavirus discussion for just a moment. I assume all y'all are tired of talking about the mask issue and the merits of mask and the constitutionality of mask, but does anybody keep it up with the situation in Portland, Oregon? This also seems to be a very, very, very big deal to the media. Apparently what has been going on, these protests around the country have led to, the destruction of private and public property. You've seen the TV footage. You've seen the looting and whatnot. But where they can't get away with it is when they start defacing federal property. That's a federal courthouse in this circumstance in Portland, but it's also post offices, military bases, VA hospitals, things you don't really maybe associate necessarily with the federal government as it's in Washington, D.C., but these are federal institutions. And in Portland, allegedly they had uncovered a plot to inflict damage on the federal courthouse. So, in order to mitigate that and prevent it from happening, what's been going on in Portland is the U.S. Marshals have been investigating it, and they've been using some tactics, some questionable tactics. I would certainly say they are questionable, picking up people, taking them off, and taking them to questioning, that not really working with the local authorities. The local authorities have decided, or the local government in Portland, the city there, has decided to let this go on. So the federal government's stepping in, and they're trying to get to the bottom of any threats to federal property. Nonetheless, it has now escalated to some kind of secret paramilitary force working as Donald Trump to incite more violence, more turmoil, more civil unrest. The View, if you've ever had the misfortune of having to watch The View this today, they were talking about This is all being done to start a race war. Meanwhile, on the other side of it, Senator Tom Cotton, Fox News this morning, talking about it. How is this any different than when they fired on Fort Sumter right before secession, right before the Civil War, the prelude to the Civil War? That the federal government has a responsibility and a duty to step in here and not allow this to happen. So that is, it's a fascinating legal discussion, but it's being played up into politics right now. and more federal government. Also in Chicago, as you just heard at the top of our news, where you have, you know, these shooting sprees and violence. It's like the wild, wild west in Chicago. We don't talk about it that much, but the Chicago law enforcement there can't handle their situation. There's so much gun violence. Mayor Lori Lightfoot in Chicago wants to blame the guns, said we need to ban guns. That's not going to happen. We have a Second Amendment. You'll always have guns. Until you repeal the Second Amendment, ladies and gentlemen, you're always going to have guns. That is a deal breaker. That's a non-starter. We can't talk about that, okay? Unless you want to repeal the Second Amendment, but good luck with that. So anyway, Donald Trump is they're going to send personnel from the Department of Homeland Security to get things under control, which really has some of these Democratic mayors on edge, where you have this gun violence. And it's not so, I guess, at face value, you sit there and you think, well, I don't really mind the federal government coming in if local officials can't handle their own situations. But there is a question about the role of the federal government. Is it expanding its reach? Is that problematic? And it goes back to the tedious face mask issue. How much state government do we want? So you have some real questionable things going on. I would say the difference in Chicago and Portland is just the local officials are refusing. They're refusing to adhere to their, uphold their own local laws. So you can't have a civil society. So that's going on, and I think that's kind of the hot button topic. If you're tired of coronavirus, which I would tell you is being played up in a way, it's a very serious issue, but it's being played up in a way to inflict political damage on this president. And trying to blame the president. I sometimes we are guilty of being in this bubble and really think that people believe that Donald Trump's somehow responsible for all of this, because if you watch cable news or whatever that might be, you're convinced of this, that this should have been handled much better, but if not for Donald Trump. But separate yourself from that bubble, or at least I will. I think there's a lot of people who are just kind of shrugging this off and say, this is really something the Chinese gave us, or it came from abroad. It's not of Donald Trump's doing. It's not even a Katrina situation, as some may want it to be. But I want to hear what you think. 251-343-0106. Or you can hit me up on Twitter at Jeff_Poor. Sean Sullivan is away today. Some other things are going on. We're getting close to a vaccine. That is some hope for cause for optimism, but particularly in the financial markets. We're getting closer and closer to that vaccine. Once we get to that vaccine, ladies and gentlemen, then it won't be that the threat of coronavirus will go away automatically. It's still going to be there, still going to be present until the vaccine can get administered, distributed, and then you can figure out who's going to get the vaccine. It probably goes to first responders at the very beginning. But then you're also going to have the obsession will be this. It will be, should we make people have the vaccine, and that'll be a big fight. But for now, if you can get some optimism in the economy, the fundamentals are there. The policy is there. As we get closer to that, the part of the economy that, you know, we have a foundation for the economy, and given you take away these unforeseen circumstances, and the economy ought to do well. You'll have a workforce that's ready to go. The struggle's going to be decoupling all this federal assistance. $3 trillion in federal money out in the economy right now is a pile of money, but that pile of money has some strings attached to some of the people. They're staying home. They can collect a check. They can make more staying at home, collecting unemployment, than they could working somewhere. What I think it might do, inevitably, since there is a real reluctance in this country to raise the minimum wage and do things like that on the economic level, the market will dictate this. You'll have to pay people more to come back to work. So you have a sort of the government intervening and raising the minimum wage without actually doing it. something to think about. All right, guys, got to take a break. We will return. This is FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back to Midday Mobile at FM Talk 106.5. Jeff Poore filling in for the legendary Sean Sullivan. Coming up here in the next segment, we'll hear from Congressman Robert Atterholt of Alabama's 4th Congressional District. We'll get into what is next for Congress. What are they going to try to do? It looks like Nancy Pelosi, yes, that Nancy Pelosi, and the leadership in the Senate with Mitch McConnell and also the White House are trying to hammer something out, some kind of relief thing out. It may mean another stimulus check for you or a payroll tax cut. So we'll get Congressman Atterholt's insights into that in the next segment. Let's take a quick phone call. Let's hear from James from Grand Bay. James, what's on your mind?
How you doing, sir?
First doing well, James.
Caller. You there?
Yeah, go ahead, James.
All right. I've got nothing against race. I've got friends on both sides of the fence. But if we got so much racial divide going on, why wasn't all this solved in the 8 years that we had Obama as president?
James, this is the natural ebb and flow of politics. It's kind of like, why is the Tea Party a big thing when Barack Obama is president? Why wasn't it a big thing during the George W. Bush years? And then it's just, I must say, I'm not condoning it, I'm not condemning it, but typically when you have a president of a party in power, the activist wing is of the other party is engaged. So as we see here, I think the activist wing of the Democratic Party, which is this Black Lives Matter movement, you saw it very, very early on in the Trump administration. At these town halls, you saw these Planned Parenthood protesters. You saw the Greenpeace folks. That's just how it is. That the idea is you want to achieve power, so you go about it by revving up your base. And when you're in the opposition, it's easy to do that because you could demagogue something. So there's no rhyme or reason to this. There's no merit to racial strife and these claims. There's always been police brutality in this age, this new digital age, when we can capture everything on camera. It's different now. There's an image to go along with that. I think that's what's going on with the Minneapolis protest, but that inspired the whole nationwide thing with Black Lives Matter and all the civil unrest. But to my honest opinion, James, it is Democrats just revving up their base because they think it's a good get out the vote tactic. And they may be right. It may prove to be right, because I can tell you, if you're just an average person in name your purple state, small town, and you're looking up at your TV and you see looting, you see rioting, you see protests, and you see coronavirus, and you don't feel good about your country, well, what are you going to do? The natural reaction is you're going to vote for somebody different. At least that's the wisdom here. So, like, that's just how the world is, unfortunately. People put so much stock in getting control, getting power, running the federal government. Thanks for the call, James. 251-343-0106. So we have some other things going on. As I said, this story in Missouri, the St. Louis, Missouri story with the circuit attorney there. If you remember the McCloskeys, they were the couple that came out of their house as protesters, where they had broken into a private street and were protesting and hurling slurs and threatening to kill this family's dog and loot their property. They go inside, they come out with two guns, the protesters flee. So the local prosecutor there in St. Louis, she has charged this couple. It's illegal to wave a gun around, apparently, in St. Louis. That this was some kind of incitement. So she has charged them, but it has the governor of Missouri. It has the attorney general in Missouri. It has the one of the U.S. senators, Josh Hawley, in Missouri. It even has the administration went on this, that this prosecutor, this local county prosecutor, I guess he's the city prosecutor, city of St. Louis prosecutor, is engaging in a civil rights violation. That civil right being your Second Amendment, your right to protect yourself. And they are calling for, at least Holly is calling for, the Department of Justice to intervene and investigate this prosecutor for trampling on the rights of these two individuals. And these two people, they're not, I wouldn't say that they're right-wing Tea Party types. They were the, I don't know, the slip-and-fall lawyer type Democrats. They give to Democrat causes. They're, you know, they never were right-wingers. Boy, have they found conservative ideology in a hurry. Mark McCloskey, a regular on Tucker Carlson's television show. That is just a, I would say, just kind of a what's one to watch. So I think there's a lot of people in the country that are watching this closely. The fear is, if the mob rule takes over, might they come for your home and hearth? Might they violate your property? And what if you call the police and the police can't come, or the police don't come? The police are acting at the behest of a mayor that sees it as a political advantage to let this happen. It's very French Revolutionary. Here's the thing about all of this. It is like the French Revolution, but you have this odd sort of corporate America thing backing it. You have Nike and you have McDonald's. It's like a civil unrest made possible by Adidas or something. Because whoever is making decisions in these corporate boardrooms in New York City or wherever, they look at this and they see a marketing opportunity, because the hip kids, the athletes, or whatever, are all on the Black Lives Matter bandwagon. So we are for that too. And you'll go into your store, you'll go into Target or Whole Foods or wherever it might be, and you'll see XYZ Corporation is dedicated to racial equality in all corners of the universe, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then that's fine. But the face of the movement isn't just this benign kind of happy to be here, to go on, to get along, working to make the world a better place. It's an angry mob. It's an angry mob, and you can't decry it, you can't criticize it without somebody coming after you. And so what I say is, it's like the French Revolution in some places, but it has these strings of it has this backdrop of like corporatism behind it. And is that kind of 2020 summed up in some ways? But that's just it, though. It is the Democratic Party, and they are successful at this. Now, will there not be a reaction to this? I think they're discounting this. The Democratic Party in America and these big cities, they may very well have the energy, and they may very well have people, and it might translate to votes, it might not. But people watching this aren't going to like it. If you recall, when this was going on in the late 60s and early 70s, it was sort of the same without the pandemic. But Richard Nixon goes on to win big in 72. Well, we know how Richard Nixon ended. Didn't end well. But Richard Nixon wins like a 49-state landslide. So people don't like the turmoil. And if the Democratic Party wants to get in bed with this, then it might come at a price. It might cost them more than they realize. I mean, you know, you listen to the James Carvilles and guys like that. They think that 2020 is a done deal. Joe Biden's your president-elect. That's not even academic. It's over. And that's very presumptive. Very. It still could go the other way. But even if it does go for Biden, and you pin it on Trump, that people just are uncomfortable with his personality, that people they're not, you know, cool with the tweeting, and the coronavirus handling could have been better, so you go with Biden. If the Democratic Party continues to associate itself with this, with this whole Black Lives Matter movement, and he continues to be at one with it. What about future elections? The one you need to watch, if Joe Biden wins the presidency, 2022 will be big for Republicans. Likewise, if Donald Trump wins re-election, it's going to be big for Democrats. And this gets back to James' question, why we didn't see this sort of thing going on during the Obama administration, because everybody was kind of happy with having Barack Obama as President of the United States on that side, and they were placated. But what the media, what the Democratic Party have done, they turned Donald Trump into this monster. And you know, that's the perception. That's where this anger comes from. And put on top of that, you're locked up for a month because of coronavirus. You couldn't leave your house. And it just, it boils over. It's a situation, it's a powder keg kind of situation, bound to happen. And did it come, is it going to have a reaction to it? I think we saw that in Alabama. I think we saw that in Alabama with the big margins for Tommy Tuberville. And a big margin, I think, for Barry Moore in the 2nd Congressional District. More on that maybe later. We're going to take a timeout. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back to FM Talk 106.5's Midday Mobile. Jeff Poor filling in for the legendary Sean Sullivan. Always great to be with you. I want to introduce my next guest. He represents the five folks in Alabama's 4th Congressional District. You may not hear from me much down this way, but Congressman Robert Aderholt joins us on the line. Congressman, how are you this afternoon?
I'm doing great, Jeff. It's good to be on with you, and good to be with your listeners especially in that part of the state. Of course, being from North Alabama, I always enjoy going down to the southern part of the state, and especially around the coastal areas. And so good to be on, and thanks for inviting me.
Hey, thanks for doing it. Let's get right into what's going on. First thing, I guess, there's a lot of buzz about the next phase of coronavirus, be it a stimulus. There's also some talk about a payroll tax cut, and it's really hard to figure out kind of why I guess Nancy Pelosi will agree to with McConnell and President Trump. What are you hearing on that side?
Well, yeah, you're right. It's really right now it's all over the map. I don't think there's really a clear cut decision. I think right now what is just really today, I think yesterday maybe beginning really today in earnest of really some discussions at the White House level and with the Senate. And of course, obviously they want to get some type of agreement between the president and between the Senate, which are both Republicans, before they come in and bring Pelosi in on that mix. I think they want to have a something nailed down that would pass. Obviously anything that Pelosi wants to do would not pass the Senate, and the president wouldn't sign. So if she really and truly wants to get some legislation through, then she's got to work with the president. She's got to work with the Senate. And right now, it's just very up in the air what it will be. And as you mentioned, it could be some payroll tax cuts that are included. I know the president is very keen on doing that. There's a discussion that has just surfaced just recently about money that goes to schools. To try to as the classrooms get back into a regular session this fall or whatever the case may be, and of course how would that be distributed is another question. Is it going to be the states that are open would be where the money goes, or as more funding go to the states that do open? So right now there's just a lot of questions that are still being I think discussed, and I think it'll be at least next week before we even really get any insight as to what may be in this package.
Well, there's a lot. I've seen Nancy Pelosi on television more than I've ever seen her in her career. Chuck Schumer on a lot. They are really dead set on this HEROES Act And there's some crazy things in that HEROES Act that they want to do, particularly with the voting and the mailing and voting to incentivize it. Yes. Do you see any of that making it through in this round of negotiations?
No. I think if they were to put that in there, there would be a deal breaker for the Republicans, because, you know, there's no way that Republicans, at least in my opinion, and I certainly hope that Mitch McConnell does not go along with trying to move forward with anything that would do some of this, nationalize our elections to mail-in ballots. And you know, the president's been very clear. He does not want to do that. So, you know, if we're trying to figure out a way to help some of the businesses and workers, then we need to keep it focused to that. So I really don't see that really happening. I know that there will probably be some discussions about it. I'm sure that the Democrats will push the envelope on whatever they can to get through that, something like that in the package. But at the end of the day, I just don't see that Republicans are going to go along with that.
It's a presidential election cycle. The politics, I guess, you got to figure out really what are the messaging components and what are things that are realistic. Is anything the Democrats have offered, any of the big ticket items, I guess, in the HEROES Act, is there anything that you see that is feasible?
Well, I think there could be some sort of direct payments again, but it would be more targeted. I think for people that are really in desperate need, I don't think there will be the blanket checks that will go out as before. Because we now know a lot of businesses are open now that were not open then, and when the first round went out. So there's a lot have changed. Now, obviously, businesses are not up to 100% occupancy, and things are still, there's room, I think, to find some common ground and try to say, hey, if we're just trying to find help the folks that are really needed help, then yes, I think there can be, but I think it'll be more targeted. I think that's what you'll see.
I want to switch gears here to the elections last Tuesday. You have a whole new slate of candidates. Tommy Tuberville headed in to take on incumbent U.S. Senator Doug Jones. You also got Barry Moore in the second and Jerry Carl here down here in the first congressional district. Do you feel good about those slate of candidates for Republicans head for federal office?
I have spoke to both of them since the election, both Jerry Carl and Barry Moore. Both of them seem to be very excited about their November election. Both of them have an opponent in the fall, so they're not taking it for granted. But obviously, both of those districts are districts that, when I say lean Republican, they really lean Republican, so they should be in good shape. But any candidate never won't take anything for granted. Just, I have an opponent in the fall as well, so I don't take that for granted either. But, I think they're optimistic. They both seem very eager. I don't know either one of them very well, but we have chatted on the phone a couple times, and they I think that they will do a good job, and I look forward to having a chance to work with them.
And with Trump at the top of the ballot, it's something you always say, and this audience may not be aware, but your congressional district is the most Trump congressional district in the country. With Trump at the top of the ballot.
Yes, in the last election in 2016, it was. I don't see why it would not be number one Trump in the nation, give Trump the most support of any district in the nation again. I think he could actually do better than he did last time, but I think there's going to be a lot of those districts across the country that are going to give Trump a lot of support. So I certainly think his reelection is in good shape. And then, let me rephrase that. Let me take good shape. I mean, again, we don't want to take anything for granted. I mean, and obviously there's a battleground state. So, but I think he's in much better shape than some of the liberal news media is trying to paint it as people are so much against Trump. I just don't believe those polls. I think that they are not polling correctly. They're not polling voters. They're just polling people that are calling on the phone. And who knows if they're calling in areas that, like New York and California, that are oversampled. So I just really, or even in different states, they're calling areas that are anti-Trump and very pro-Biden. So I think if the president stays the course, standing up for law and order, standing up for issues that's less government, then I think he can definitely be reelected. And then, of course, I mentioned the other issue on the ballot, or the other candidate on the ballot that is the Senate race. And I've also talked with Tommy Tuberville. He and I had a nice chat last week over the phone. And he is, again, not taking anything for granted. He knows that Doug Jones has a lot of money, and he's going to say that the entire Democrat apparatus will be behind him. And they really want to take back the Senate. So he is they're doing everything they can. So he is working hard, but he certainly, from our conversation, he seems to be focused on winning in November.
And just to piggyback on that real quick, I guess the point I was going to ask you was, with all of this turmoil and everything that's going on TV, it seems to me, at least, and you from a very, very Republican district, that the Republicans are perhaps more motivated than ever, because they just don't like what they're seeing on TV. They don't like the way the media are acting, but they don't like seeing the destruction of property and things like that. That's going to get Republicans across the country, and even more so in Republican districts, out to the polls in November.
That's exactly right. Is that the Republicans are much more motivated, I think, to vote for Trump than the Democrats are motivated to vote for Biden. That's the bottom line. Biden, of course, he's going to get a lot of anti-Trump votes, but there's not, I don't sense that many people are just really excited about Joe Biden as a candidate. And he is, someone, I was talking to one of my colleagues just in the last day or two, and they were talking about how they saw an interview 4 years ago with Biden, and what a difference, he comes across just within the last 4 years, and how he, he's not as sharp as he once was. Now, of course, I never did agree with his politics most of the time, but he could communicate pretty well, and he certainly was a longtime member of the Senate and vice president. So, but really, it's I think Trump, when you put him side by side, Trump is seems to be 15, 20 years younger. So, even though they're a little bit closer in age than that.
Yeah, well, he certainly proved that in 16 with the five rallies a day there at the end. Finally, winding down on this, one of your colleagues, John Lewis, passed last weekend. You served with him for a long time in the Congress. So talk about him, if you would, a little bit.
Well, I got to know John. Of course, he's a Democrat, I'm a Republican, but we're both from the South, and he's actually originally from Alabama. Most people, I think, don't realize that, but he was from down in Troy. He grew up there, and he's quick to remind you of that. And I had a chance to go down back in, I guess it was 2015, when they had the 50th anniversary of the march from Selma to Montgomery, and they did to commemorate that. And I had a chance to go down there and to commemorate that event with a lot of my Republican colleagues and Democrat colleagues. And, had a chance to get to know him even better. But one thing that he and I had in common, but, everybody knows him as John Lewis, but his real name is, he told me one day, he said, my name is talking about my name being Robert. He said, my name is John Robert. And he said, that's what my mama always called me, was John Robert. And so, I have, the last several years, I've had this ongoing, every time I would see him in the hallway, I'd say, hello, John Robert. And I knew that no one else called him that, except I knew that his mother did. And, of course, he didn't mind being called that. So we had that Robert connection, and that, of course, my name is Robert, and his middle name is Robert. So but he was one of the kindest individuals. I mean, he was very, when he was speaking on his issues, he was very passionate, but he just really, his demeanor around, you've seen in the hallway, very friendly, always just had a very, how are you doing today? And, I just can't tell you what a kind individual he was. And he will be missed in the House and, of course, across the nation.
Carson, we got to end it there, but I want to thank you for your time, and thank you for making time for the folks in Southwest Alabama today.
Well, I'm glad to be on. I hope to, when you're going to be filling in again, let me know. I'd love to be on.
All right, absolutely. That was Congressman Robert Adderholt here on the program. We're going to take a quick break and come back, wrap things up. This is Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
And welcome back to Midday Mobile at FM Talk 106.5. Jeff Poore filling in for the great Sean Sullivan on this Tuesday afternoon, 55 minutes after the hour. We'll talk about some news real quick. Trump has just put forth an executive order that forbids the counting of undocumented for the purposes of deciding House apportionment. Basically, let me tell you what's going on here. There's a big fight right now. If you drive around anywhere in Alabama, you will see signs. You'll see those signs over the interstate telling you to participate in your census. The reasoning is, you know, that's how federal government determines how much money or how much representation or the Electoral College representation each state gets. And the census is that is done every 10 years, and then they do apportionment in the off year. And in 2022, you have new lines drawn. The fear for Alabama is, while Alabama is growing, these states out west are growing at a much faster tick. And part of that is immigration. Part of that, perhaps, is illegal immigration. Illegal immigrants are inflating numbers in blue states, perhaps. New Mexico, Arizona, maybe more of a purple state, but Nevada, California, and so on. And then it's taking away from Alabama's clout in, you know, their ability to, their proportionment of the number of people they have. So, you know, you look at each state and you determine out of you have a very limited piece of a pie that you have to divide up based on that number. It's taking away, it's making Alabama's slice in theory smaller and perhaps losing a congressional seat at that. So we have seven congressional seats in Alabama, roughly 700 something thousand people in each district. The possibility, we're right on the edge of losing one of those seats. It would bump, go down to six congressional districts, bump everybody up to about 800,000 people. Well, the news here today is Trump is not going to allow the undocumented for those purposes of dividing up the members of Congress from each state. So that may be a reprieve for Alabama, perhaps. It's being heralded as such by our Attorney General, Steve Marshall. So it's being heralded that way, and that's potentially good news for Alabama. The question is, this is an executive order. This isn't some court ruling. This certainly isn't something passed by Congress. Will it stand the legal test? So you should expect to see lawsuits filed right away from these advocacy groups saying that the undocumented immigrants, illegal aliens, or whatever you want to call them. I don't know what the political correct terminology is, but that they should be counted for terms of apportionment, that the Constitution doesn't leave them out, and it seems a little bit of a stretch. But we're going to find out. My guess, I would worry. I'd be really, really worried that John Roberts is going to side with the liberal justices on this again. But this is going to be a big fight. We'll know once and for all whether or not you can count illegal immigrants for sake of apportionment. It's big news. This gets that ball rolling, and we'll find out more, I think, later on down the road. All right, guys, I got to get out of here. What's Working with Cam Marston is next. Thank you for listening. This is Jeff Poore filling in for Sean Sullivan on Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5.